Hello, this is Yahoo's with a microphone. This is Brian Skull, musical movie critic, to my right.
Ronnie Haynes.
To his right.
David Miles.
And we're here to talk about one of the most popular movies ever made, one of the biggest box office movies ever, and one of, I think it's safe to say, all of our personal favorites, Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial. First thing I want to go into, this is probably some of the best opening credits music I've ever heard.
Brian, I had a question I really wanted to ask you about this. What is the name of the technique used to make this sound? I know it has something to do with scratching an object on a gong. Is that it?
There are some different ways that you can go about doing a sound like this. Over a gong or on a vibraphone, or
right.
Those are a couple of the ways. But
very haunting.
Yes, very haunting. Really adds to some mystery of what we're about to see in the opening scene. Melissa Mathison wrote this. Also later wrote Kundun, Martin Scorsese's film. Kennedy.
She wrote Indian in the Cupboard also.
Yeah.
The movie version, anyway.
And this is for the special edition, by the way, the 2002 version.
Mm-hmm. We're already seeing an enhanced effect here. The new skyline.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a little bit of an enhancement there. More stars, anyway, than the 82 version.
More remarkable John Williams music, too.
Oh, absolutely. The opening flute.
The opening music just gives you chills. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. It's one of his best scores.
Mm-hmm. The whole movie is brilliantly scored.
Mm-hmm.
That's new right there.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I think all the images of the E.T. ship in the wide shots anyway are newly enhanced.
And really of E.T. in this scene in general, mm-hmm. because of the fact that
the sequence.
Obviously in the original version they didn't want to give away what he looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
one of the problems I have with the enhancements is that at the beginning of the movie, at the beginning of the film, you're supposed to, E.T. is supposed to be kept in a little bit of a shroud of mystery,
mm-hmm.
but I think some of the new effects take away that. Take that away. I think.
Yeah.
Take away the authenticity of it,
mm-hmm.
and the you're able to see more of E.T., which I don't think was the point originally in '82.
No, it wasn't. And one of the things I was just going to mention is, it seemed like in doing that this was really done for the fans, people mm-hmm. who had already grown to love the movie, mm-hmm. and I mean it's just something, just a new way of looking at it, really. Uh-huh.
This is supposed to establish that E.T.'s race they're kind of a race of botanists. I think they travel mm-hmm. from. This is supposed to establish the fact that they travel from planet to planet studying otherworldly plant life, which I thought was kind of neat. These are the only images you ever get to see the inside of the ship, I believe.
Yeah, it is.
One of the things about the effects. I think overall, though, it was kind of subtly done, you know, meant more to enhance rather than just completely pull over and add new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that.
Yeah, I think one of the worries with a lot of people when it came to special edition, the enhancement of the effects, was they didn't want E.T. turning into Jar Jar Binks.
Right.
And I think Steven and ILM did absolutely wonderful job of making sure that wasn't the case throughout the entire movie.
I
love the shot.
I do not remember seeing this movie for the first time in '82 when I was, I think, 5 years old. But when I finally got to see this last year for the first time on the big screen, this particular mm-hmm. sequence, it just really got to me. It really moved me.
Yeah, evidently. My mother claims that we saw this like 13 times in theaters when it first came out. I honestly don't remember a single one.
Well, with your family, that is believable.
That's about on par for the
for your family,
of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like you. When I saw this last year at the re-release, it was, I mean,
that
and this music, and I mean, it gave you, you get a certain buzz mm-hmm. off of certain scenes in movies that really just work. And this did this for me last year when I saw it in the re-release. Mm-hmm. And I mean, part of it is the music, part of it is the cinematography, part of it is just about everything in general, the staging, editing, what have you.
Just now we got to see some, here also is some vintage Spielberg playing with lights and smoke.
Yeah.
Very vintage of his type of approach to this kind of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was really interesting, I read Roger Ebert wrote a review about this in his Great Movies series, and he mentioned that, you know, you really see the entire movie is seen by point of view of either Elliot or E.T. The camera is not like eye level for like any of us.
Right.
I mean, it's
that was
eye
very,
level with child.
That was very intentional. And all the adults were filmed from the waist up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I never really noticed that.
That's
before.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite enhancement right here.
Yeah.
The running.
Running.
That's my. That's probably my favorite. My favorite new idea.
And admittedly, when I first saw it, I was a bit thrown. I was like, what are they doing with this? But then it occurred to me, it's like, how else will he run?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're, you know, his legs
himself.
Are basically stumps.
He propels himself with his long
and, I mean,
arms.
Yeah.
Right? He just, that, which I thought was actually quite brilliant.
Yeah, it's a very
new concept.
Yeah, it's a very ingenious idea on mm-hmm. their part. I mean, they, and you...
They are thinking here.
Mm-hmm.
There,
oh, yeah.
There was some thought put into that.
Yeah. And
there was a great deal of thought put into
this
that.
This is one of the better special edition director's cut, whatever you want to
mm-hmm.
say about it. There yeah. are some issues I have with it that we'll touch on
Episode 4. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yeah, that's me.
I'm not going into Star Wars special
edition
at this level.
Right here, this effect, this particular effect, replaces one of my favorite... shots from 82. I love the scene of in 82, the ship flying over the tree branches and leaving that little light of red. I love that shot from 82, and I
mm-hmm.
I really do miss it in the special edition.
I like how all those flashlights go down.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's some more enhancements.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, you see more of ET than I think you should be able to in the beginning. I think because of the enhancements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a problem. Showing this to somebody for the first time, mm-hmm. I wouldn't show them this version.
Yeah, you know the
G-Wiz
quality almost kind of you almost kind of lose it.
Yeah,
but that I believe that's a little bit of it because it looks
mm-hmm.
looks like less of a matte painting there. I think it's
yeah, that's an enhancement because
mm-hmm.
I don't really
but
remember
yeah, but
that portion of it.
But yeah, more playing with lights and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the kids smoking here?
I mean, no, I think it's...
I think the coffee.
Was
yeah,
I think it's the coffee.
Well, I mean, that's a lot. There's only I only see one cup of coffee. Everyone else is drinking Coke. I want to know if to make one of the kids smoking was really necessary just to have smoke in the scene. That's what I was just...
I think it's the coffee.
Yeah, I think it is the coffee.
But there's
yeah,
only one cup of
smoke. You don't see anybody smoking.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe that's his excuse to have...
Well, look, is the smoke exactly... Coffee. Is it coming out of the coffee cup?
It's coming out of that little pot right next
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, okay.
What is that thing?
You know, I never knew that the kids were playing Dungeons and Dragons until when I finally saw it again in 2002. I never realized it. I thought that was kind of neat.
I think it came to me earlier than that, but
mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean, you.
I did not play Dungeons and Dragons when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
but I thought that was kind of a neat little thing to finally notice when I saw it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'll talk about this when we get to one of the parts
mm-hmm.
later when. They're in Elliot's room, but it's like, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, that time of,
mm-hmm.
At time period, I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
what kids were doing, playing
mm-hmm.
D&D, so.
And a lot of people are still wasting their time that way. But now I get all the absolute power stuff and the Game Master talk. Well, by the way, I still have a real affection for the dialogue written for the children. I think that was all very authentic and a real testament to Melissa Matheson's script.
Yeah, it's an excellent script. I mean, you know,
but,
I don't know when we were going to talk about Well, one of the things I wanted to touch on is speculation as to why it didn't do as well as, say, Star Wars when it was re-released last year.
Right, well.
Another great, moody, suspenseful moment.
I think there's a little bit of an enhancement here with the wide shot of with the tool shed, if I'm not mistaken.
This shot?
Well, actually, I think it's the next night when he's laying out there waiting for it. We'll see because
it's kind of a classic movie, right?
Yeah, this is the moment that it's one of those moments that just creep you out anytime you see it.
Throw the ball and then it comes right back at you. You don't know why.
Like, huh? D. Wallace. Better known as D. Wallace Stone nowadays. She was in Peter Jackson's The Frighteners. It's the only
was
thing
she,
I
really?
Can think of recently. Yeah. Nobody go out there. I mean, it's classic movie cliche. It's like, don't go out there. Everybody goes out there.
It's amazing how the mom has no control throughout this entire movie over her children.
Oh, yeah.
That just wouldn't happen in my house.
That's one of the things. I mean, this was a very personal movie for Steven Spielberg because, I mean, he was actually a child of divorce, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he really related more to Elliot. And I wonder how much of this was really based on his own experiences. I'm sure a lot of it. Mm-hmm.
He said I've heard him say in interviews that he modeled a lot of himself after the older brother as well, Mike.
Yeah. Mike, played by Robert McNaughton. Mm-hmm. I believe that's his name. Didn't really do much of anything, and just something he mentioned in the.
If you look at him now, he looks like he's done a lot of drugs in between now and two, but that's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah, but he's very good. All of the performances here are really good.
I can't say enough about the kids.
I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Henry Thomas, who's. This is probably one of the best young
child performances
ever. Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't think of...
Jake Lloyd's Anakin Skywalker has nothing on Henry Thomas, but anyways.
We're not talking about episode one. I'm going to just avoid all Star Wars talk for now. Well, most Star Wars talk for now.
I'll do my
I've
best.
I've got some later, but anyway.
Star Wars
you can't... Yeah. There's that sound again. Technique that I'm a little bit of a callback to the beginning credits.
Mm-hmm. This is very good sound design, sound editing, whoever.
No, that,
just
that,
sound mix in general is excellent.
The only thing I remember from watching this in the theaters in '82 is this moment because I remember how much it scared the daylights out of me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think probably a big reason why I don't remember the rest of the movie from '82 because I was probably under my seat for the rest of the movie after this scene, but because I was convinced I was convinced my parents had bought me into a scary movie. So
it kind of is. I mean, yeah, you know, if you think about it, this is actually quite a. Not exactly a disturbing story, but kind of a dark story for a family film or a kids' movie, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll go on record as saying this is one of the, if not the greatest family film ever. I mean, this, you know, Wizard of Oz, you could make a debate for the Disney classics, but for my money, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the one I watch over and over again and just absolutely love, get a kick out of.
A little bit of an enhancement here.
Yeah.
Yep.
The editing is great in this.
Mm. I remember reading somewhere that the sounds ET makes at the beginning of the film were supposed to be very specific. A lot of you know grunts and squawks and everything. It was all written down and written, and you know, it was supposed to be this way. It wasn't he wasn't supposed to say, take me to your leader. He was supposed to have a very specific type of dialogue, which that's another detail that just adds up. Just another one of the many great details that goes into. Here's the, not right now. That's a little bit of the bike theme.
Yeah.
Which I was, not this necessarily, but.
Yeah, I actually, in looking at a little bit some of the reviews for this before earlier today, noticed a review where somebody who, very respected critic, who I'll refrain from mentioning, respected online critic, said that this was a mediocre score. I don't know where he got that from, because I'm like, okay, I believe he mentions it's like, other than a really soaring theme, there's really not much to it, and I'm like, no.
Yeah,
there's the theme of the, you know, keys, and which is basically what Peter Coyote's name is in this movie, isn't it, Keys? You have the bike theme, you have this theme that's playing now, and
originally, Ellie was supposed to be using M&M's, I think.
Yes.
But there was some...
Well, M&M's declined to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a matter of, like, there wasn't real controversy about it. They just didn't want to do it.
And
they've
been kicking themselves ever since.
Yeah.
Because the sales of Reese's Pieces went through the roof after this movie came out. So.
And I'll mention this little line from review I wrote last year when I saw it. I'll sum up the Reese's Pieces over M&M's. Simply by saying, I bet the guy who made the decision to not allow the use of M&M's has been kicking himself all of these years. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he has. Not literally, but...
Yeah, figuratively.
There is a great line, classic, you know, joke in here, which...
Better by Drew Barrymore?
Well, no, there's the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, I really like
this dinner scene. I think I wish there could have been more scenes of all the characters together like this.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds very much like a family.
And you get the feeling that the family is there's a bit of turmoil.
There's some tension, but it's not touched on specifically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It just comes through.
That's the line, and I was so worried that I read this one report online that somebody had said that line had been taken out, and I'm like, no, you cannot take that line out.
Why
are
they taking that out? I don't know.
I mean, it's a classic line. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's...
I do remember...
Like, there's no way you could get away with
something that makes me laugh whenever I hear that line is thinking of when I was watching this again in 2002 in the theaters for the first time, and all the little kids in the audience like saying, "What does he mean? What does that mean, mommy? Penis rape? I don't get that." And parents having to explain it. Well, not necessarily. Just
they
saying,
probably didn't explain it.
Just saying, "Shut up and watch the movie."
Yeah, be quiet and watch your movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Well. Actually, this might be a good time to get into it. How many people were actually in that screening of E.T. that you saw?
You know, it was on the first day, I think, and I think it was mostly a lot of adults taking their little kids in.
Was it reasonably full? That's basically
no, you know, it wasn't. For one thing, it was an afternoon showing.
Yeah.
But secondly, something that I thought was interesting was the fact that it was a lot of moms who wanted to share this movie with their kids.
Yeah.
Really little kids, just, you know, because I don't think a lot of young adults or people who didn't, you know, or people who are only looking for the next big summer blockbuster popcorn flick, you know, weren't going to be able to appreciate it the way that maybe we're able to.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the points I wanted to make in that, I mean, this film, by all...
It's a lot of smoke.
...really underperformed at the box office in the re-release at least compared to the Star Wars Special Edition, only made like $30 million or something like that.
Yeah, which is kind of
low for something like this and re-release.
Kind of disappointing
and,
too.
You know, it is disappointing because of the fact that, I mean, you know, I think part of the reason of that is that the quality of family movies has just disintegrated. In the 20 years since this movie came out. I mean, you know, every once in a while you'll get a gem like a Spy Kids or
Sorcerer's Stone,
any of the Pixar movies or Harry Potter or whatever. Mm-hmm. But most of them are just, you know, most of them are rated PG now.
Yeah.
Which is surprising. And it's like, they're supposed to be kids' movies, and it's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I won't go into naming specific ones, but suffice to say, I mean, there are some where it's like, how's this supposed to be a family film?
Uh-huh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, this is PG, and for good reason. It's not a G movie. It's too scary to be a G movie. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you know, you don't have the toilet humor, except for the penis breath reference. I mean, you don't have, you know, you don't have any of that stuff that parents might find objectionable,
right?
You know, in a family film. And the fact of the matter is, I just can't imagine anybody not liking this, although the person who hired me at the video store that I worked for as summer, I tried to put this in one day to watch it, and they didn't like it.
Huh.
And that just baffled me. I'm like, how do you not like E.T.? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those movies that I thought was universally loved.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's always somebody.
I guess not. And, you know, I basically just talked over another classic brilliant scene where
the meeting of the alien.
The meeting of E.T. and him putting the Reese's down. And stuff. Mm-hmm.
He couldn't talk.
That's
I thought that was pretty well acted too.
Yeah. It's very well acted. Yeah. I mean, Henry Thomas he really is very good.
Why haven't we seen more of him in the last 20 years?
He's done stuff. I mean, you know,
he was in Legend of the Fall.
He was in Gangs of New York. This
was he really? Was
it? Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Oh, wow. He was DiCaprio's gang.
Oh.
I mean, you know, it was kind of a small role, but I mean, otherwise, I mean, yeah, you like seeing these guys. You know, somebody like Henry Thomas, you know, do well, because it's like usually kids actors are, you know, it's hard for them to get past that puberty thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he pulled it off really well. And I loved watching his, on one of the extras, his audition scene. I absolutely loved seeing that.
It's terrible
what Steven Spielberg did to made him.
Perform the way he does.
But, I mean, you know what? He pulled it off. I mean, you really can't see anybody else doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're supposed to be the first.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the first time you really see E.T.'s face, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm a big fan of the fact that a lot of the time the only way they acknowledge his presence is with his hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming up from a. And they were performed by a mime named Alan. And this is a woman, by the way, Alan DeVoe, I think. That was the name of a hand mime.
I thought that was the cinematographer.
No, that is. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm getting.
I thought that was. Yeah. I
no,
thought that
no.
was the.
Please excuse me. Please excuse fellow movie buffs. That was a. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. I'm getting my notes mixed. Caprice Roth.
Oh,
the hand mime,
yeah.
The name of the hand mime, who did a really wonderful job
mm-hmm.
by helping to acknowledge E.T.'s presence, sometimes only by seeing his hands like coming up, which I thought was, you know, it's kind of like a Jaws sort of thing, you know, how they only acknowledge Jaws, you know, at certain points in the movie with just the theme or like a tail fin coming out of. You know, I just thought that was back in the day, it was mainly just a money-saving technique, but...
Well, the thing with Jaws is, that was out of necessity, because the shark wasn't working.
Right, exactly, but...
I've
always thought of it as kind of like a subconscious kind of connection. I've always thought it was a little subconscious connection.
I mean, I'm not knocking it. I think, you know, Spielberg, you know, I don't want to get on a rant about Jaws, but, I mean, yeah, Spielberg did a brilliant job. Jaws, it's a great thriller.
Well, I'm just talking about the technique of acknowledging a character's presence, just only with the subtlest of techniques. And I thought that using the hands instead of just seeing the full animatronic was
I like that little dip down in the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those little things where it's barely noticeable unless you really listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that you remember.
Was that the first time that we saw Elliot and E.T. mirroring each other?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because this is the first scene we've really... I don't know. You could say that... Well, they really didn't mirror each other. I was going to say you could really say that they were mirroring each other when...
You know what I like this scene? Is, for some reason, I've always thought, and I never thought about it until, like, last night when I was watching, is that this is kind of supposed to, this is kind of a reflection of, this is kind of a character moment, I think, a little bit of a reflection of the character of Keyes and his child-like innocence, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, just eating the candy off the ground, you know, any other, you know, response, you know, any other... adult with half a brain when you eat candy right off the ground.
Yeah.
But I just thought of that last night when I was watching it again, is that, you know, that's kind of like a reflection of his character. I think that's an interesting little character moment. I think it was supposed to get a laugh mostly, but the more I think about it, it turns out to be more of a character moment than a little bit of a piece of comic relief.
Oh, yeah.
I like this Michael pulling back the car.
Dunk.
This is me right here.
That's all three of us when we're learning to drive. That's
yeah.
The mailbox.
Well,
yeah.
That was me when I was learning to drive stick, at least.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But,
right?
Well,
I mean, it hasn't been a year since I've seen you do that.
Curb check. Curb check.
You know that's bad.
That's a good technique, by the way, of like faking sick. I don't know why I never. I don't. I'm wondering how many kids picked up on that and tried it at one point after seeing the movie.
Oh, I'm sure he got hundreds of. I'm sure the filmmakers got hundreds of letters saying,
that, you know,
"Why did you put that in your movie?"
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but anyway, it'd be funny.
You know,
it'd
be really ironic. Is what would be really ironic is that they got hundreds of letters complaining about Elliot's techniques of faking sick, but nothing about Elliot getting stark raving mad drunk halfway through it.
Oh, I'm sure they got a lot of letters on that one too.
That'd be an interesting thing to find out, just how much what people initially at the first point had a problem with this movie. But I mean, it was so well received that it's hard to think anyone had a problem with it.
Yeah, because I mean, well. That point, that move, that scene's later, and I can make my points on that scene later. But
what is the mirroring of the two? How's that explained?
I think it's something that just happens very subtly. I think it's
one of those things.
I don't know why. Is it, you know, their culture something? Does it have to do with the heart red thing?
I don't know that it's necessarily. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question.
I mean, I've just accepted it and just, you know, just kind of.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everyone just makes it happen.
I'm just wondering if he ever explained it in one of his interviews or something like that.
Not in A1 I've read. Little nod to George Lucas.
This is Steven's
buddies using Star Wars.
This is a brilliant bonding theme, by the way.
Yeah.
With the harp. That's just just one of the more gorgeous parts of the score, I think.
And, you know, a more cynical person would say, oh, well, this was just cross promotion, you know, Steven.
Oh, I never
paying nod
that.
For George Lucas.
I never
but I mean, bottom
that.
Line is, it's like, you know, when we were this age, we were, well, when this movie came out, I mean, we were playing with Star Wars toys.
I never thought it was cross promotion. I just thought
I never did too.
It's a really neat
like
moment.
It's one of those funny scenes where it's like people see it.
It's just
and it's like, hey, I've got that.
It's just a really neat moment in the movie, and this is probably my favorite moment in the whole movie when he's sharing his stuff.
Not
his toys, his action figures. By the way, they're action figures. By the way, I really love.
Like this. You can't eat this because this is fake.
That's what I was going to acknowledge, is the fact that this is all just, this is great 10-year-old logic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, this is how a kid would explain his toys to an alien from another world.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is a peanut. We eat this. But you can't eat this because this is fake. This is a bank that we keep all our money. And then he pulls out this little tiny car. This is what we get around in. And just think what E.T.'s thing is. This is what you get around in. How can you fit in this? And that's why I like this. This is great 10-year-old logic.
What I find really amazing is the fact that, you know, they're all making all these references to the time period, Star Wars, action figures, mm-hmm. whatever.
Matchbox.
And then
Hot Wheels.
Somehow the movie still seems timeless. Mm-hmm. You know, somehow.
That oh, yeah. Works
somehow. I think that's
well, I mean, that has a lot to... I mean, it's all about story and the dialogue. I mean, the dialogue itself is not dated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't get many references to that time period in mm-hmm. the start... To the time period in the dialogue. I mean, it's not like, you know, you think about, oh, well, this, you know, this is a bit contemporary. You know, it's not like they're making, you know, jokes, you know, based on stuff in the time period. But
I think that's probably when we first really established the mirroring of the two characters,
or at least the fact that they're connected in some way,
the psychic bond, if you will.
Yeah,
he's really scared to death, and he has no idea mm-hmm. why.
And you have the umbrella opening, which, you know, is never good luck. You know,
that's actually interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah,
that's actually kind of a.
I thought about that when I watched it.
A little subtle metaphor mm-hmm. there. I love how scared he is.
I like how those. Yeah, this is one of the new scenes.
Yeah,
it's a fun little scene. I mean, you know, it's
I had a little bit of a problem with it. I think this is a cute joke, by the way. This is the first time you ever see his ability to extend his neck, which is a neat little surprise, but
a nice little thing like, ha-ha, I can get as tall as you.
But we're crossing over into Jar Jar Binks territory here, almost.
Yeah, almost. We're kind of skirting the edge, mm-hmm. but it's done in such a cute way that it's just
he looks just too animated, no pun intended.
Yeah, this is one of the. This is probably not the animatronic. CG just doesn't work as well as it should.
I mean,
they get the look of him right.
Mm-hmm.
They get the look. They get the detail of the character. Right. But it isn't animatronic.
No, it isn't. Which was supposed to be the point too. I remember Spielberg being very adamant about the computer effects being married with the animatronic on mm-hmm. as flawlessly as possible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the whole talk about the bugs in the water tower. That's just more great 10-year-old logic. It's just, that's exactly how I talked when I was that age, so.
More shadowing at the mall.
But that's exactly how I used to talk to my mom when she'd call on days I'd, like, fake sick, and she'd say, well...
Yeah.
She'd be at work and call me, ask me how I'm doing. That's exactly how I used to. Anyway.
This is one of those things where if you think about later in the movie where Michael finds E.T., this is one of those things where it's sort of a little character moment for E.T. in that it... Wouldn't that ruin the phone? Anyway.
Apparently E.T. is now aquatic, I guess.
Well, what I was going to say is it's one of those things where it's like you sort of... might get the idea if you remember later on in the movie where he's found that it's maybe water is one of the things that he needs to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's
which is a good point. Mm-hmm. But he's always, you know, for the most part throughout the whole movie, he's almost always got a moist quality to him.
Mm-hmm.
So are they hosing him down every 15 minutes like you're supposed to do when a whale's out of the water mm-hmm. or anyway.
Or the football pad.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what song he's singing there.
I don't know.
I mean, he shakes up his Coke before he drinks, before he opens it.
$69,000 on Astro. Wow. That's way back.
and that was.
I thought this was pretty cool. Typical older brother thing.
Yeah.
Well done.
Reference to Dungeons and Dragons, which I now understand.
And, you know, subsequently when he says it, it's a reference to another reference to Star Wars.
You think?
Come on. Doesn't he sound like Frank Oz doing Yoda when he said it?
Well, no. Well, right here, I thought you were talking about like Elliot saying, "I have absolute power," but no, this is.
When Mike says it,
that's without question. Now, E.T. looks a little bit goofy being pulled out of the closet here. You would think there have been some enhancements made here, but he just looks a little bit too much like a guy in a suit here, I think. But I mean, that's 82. You can't.
Okay, maybe it's Miss Piggy or Fozzie Bear. Well, it's Frank Oz, nonetheless.
Right.
But like how his face just gets stone cold stunned,
E.T.'s
and chaos ensues.
I really liked Drew Barrymore's performance throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, Drew Barrymore did
a wonderful
job in this.
For how old she is, or
like
how little
six.
She is. Yeah. It's just awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we could debate how well she's done since then.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's turned into another.
She's had difficulties, but.
Well, she's just turned into another. I don't know. I unfortunately went on about this during Spider-Man. I was supposed to be talking about Spider-Man, but Drew Barrymore just hasn't, impressed me since.
Mm-hmm.
She was a wonderful child actress and real find for this movie and fit the performance flawlessly. But since then, she's just turned into another pretty face, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just nothing special about her. Just if you notice, like in a lot of reviews for movies that she's in, she's described as a delight or fun, but nothing beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keeping him. You have to forgive us when we're not talking. We're watching the movie.
Yeah.
We're enjoying it just as much as you are.
Mm-hmm.
These are just some really awesome family moments going in.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
It's just the right touch on this. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like
more great kid logic here.
Oh yes, torture the doll. Been there, done that. And yes, she screams that loud.
Yes.
And you,
Dave had two brothers and a little sister, so and which I had neither, so
yeah,
Dave knows all about
only
this
child is.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Dave knows all about this sort of thing. This is arguably some of the best child dialogue ever written for a screenplay, I think.
And yeah,
some of the most authentic child moments. And I've always wondered if this is kind of like a homage to Poltergeist in a way, because I know Spielberg was producing Poltergeist at the exact same time that he was directing this one, directing E.T. So I mean, the whole suburbia, the whole theme of suburbia, kind of they fit.
Yeah.
Peter, is it Peter Coyote or Peter
Coyote?
It's
Peter Coyote, if I'm not mistaken. Because I thought it was Coyote for a while. I think it is Coyote, if I remember correctly.
He's still being filmed from the waist up.
Yeah. I like how she calls her Mary.
Well, I never understood that,
Mary. I mean, only a kid that age could get away with that. Yeah, exactly. The rest of us would be slapped in the face. Mm-hmm. But if you can hear that, that's my Malakan cockatoo. We have a Malakan cockatoo.
She has some. I've always wondered if there was some enhancements made on this shot of ET's feet. It looks a little bit more anime than it did in the 82 version for some reason.
I don't know.
Take a look at it. Tell me what you think. Well, it's coming up anyway. I thought we were right on top of it, but obviously not. But I like this whole.
Mm-hmm. San Fernando Valley.
This is exactly how, you know, a bunch of kids would.
Where are you from? He's from the blinds. Or out the window.
You have a rainbow blinds there.
Doesn't it look a little bit more.
Yeah. It kind of does, yeah.
It looks like there's a little bit of enhancement there, but.
A good enhancement.
But, yeah, I mean, of course, you know. They're only feet, you little twerp, so. I mean, Elliot states it clearly for us that they're only feet, so, yeah. And that we're all little twerps, but. Anyway. I was always wondering if these balls of clay, are they supposed to represent E.T.'s solar system or not? That's my take on it anyway.
Well, I mean, he's putting it on specific planets.
It does.
So that's what I've always figured. But but these are balls of Play-Doh that I didn't know that until not too long. I guess
He does look a little moist right there.
Yeah. I mean, he's. I mean, that's.
The voice dude.
Yeah. It's the first time you ever.
Yeah.
He establishes his levitating.
Telekinetic. I think that's the right word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His telekinetic levitating powers. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Not much of a juggler, apparently.
But I'm not sure if our little kids ever understood exactly what the purpose of that sequence was. That moment.
Yeah.
Just acknowledging E.T.'s presence without even showing the full animatronic. Mm-hmm. Just I love that. Those are some of my favorite moments. They're getting close.
Bad guys again. Not really bad guys.
Not bad guys, but for the kids,
they're the bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we're old enough to know that it's like, well, they're not bad guys per se, but I mean, you know, they're not bad guys like twirling a mustache and saying evil things, tying a lady to the train track, but, you know.
You sure you're not taking that a little bit too far there, Brian?
I think I did take that a little too far, but anyway.
Who had the coloring book with this image in there of like E.T. reading the little ABC book? I had that, and I always think about that coloring book and that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is when we
E.T. theme.
Well, no, I think we first established the symbiotic relationship between E.T. and the flowers. I think.
Yeah.
I think that was a moment specifically for the little kids to like, you know, when you ever start to see the flowers wilting. That just means E.T. is getting.
Oh, we have a cameo appearance from one of my cats, X-File. Who has decided to drop in and.
Does that mean.
That's alright.
Well, did he?
There he gets made by.
That's
a really lame dick joke.
I don't get it. I don't remember hearing
Sin
those.
Is supremus.
I don't remember hearing those put downs in school. But
well, this is California,
and I was 5 years old at the time. But Yeah, that's.
I don't remember my bus ever being this rowdy.
Yeah, we got in trouble when that happened.
Yeah.
Sorry.
This is the most clueless mom in all of film history, I think.
Well,
I'm sorry.
She doesn't have it together. I mean, her husband just got rid of her.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
her husband's in Mexico.
In Mexico.
Yeah, with Sally. Her husband's in Mexico.
Detailed right. We'll leave it up to you to decide.
Well, this is
doing.
Actually Robert Zemeckis' idea. Believe
really?
It or not. Yeah. I saw Steven Spielberg interviewed on Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton, and he explained how this
I love
is.
That.
He explained
he
how
looks so perfect.
Well, they can do it. Steven Spielberg explains in his interview on Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton, which is actually one of the most underrated TV shows on TV right now. That he explained that was actually Robert Zemeckis' idea, the E.T. hiding among the stuffed animals, which is a one of the iconic moments in the whole movie.
Well, yeah. I wonder who drew that. That's actually a pretty cute little
I think
drawing.
Henry Thomas could have drawn that.
Yeah.
But this is
girl checking him out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. This is exactly how I would screw up any chance I ever had with a girl in like in the fourth grade or whatever, you know.
Or even now,
you know, a girl thinks you're remotely cute, and all you ever do is screw it up by
make a fool out of yourself.
Exactly, which is pretty much what's about to happen.
Well, it's not his fault.
No, but you know, of course, but you know, but
in
it's
a matter
gonna,
of
it's
speaking,
look,
it's not his.
It's
fault.
Gonna look like his fault, which
yeah.
is always the case, you know. No matter how hard you try, the fact that matters is that you tried too hard. But
that girl in front of Elliot looks evil for some reason. She looks just too into the.
Well, she's the kid that asks on Friday afternoon if there's going to be any homework for the weekend. That's what she is. But anyway,
now I am not ashamed to say I dressed up as E.T. and this well. When I was younger, obviously. Yeah. I mean, you know, with, you know, the plaid shirt, with, like, root beer cans instead of beer cans.
Well, yeah.
And hopefully. All that stuff. And it was really funny.
Look, because when I did it, I had actual beer. So, yeah.
And now we know why. Now we know why.
But there's some enhancements there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Those are fine.
But, of course, very subtle. Yeah, see, there it goes.
That's not subtle,
you know.
But, okay, there's a little.
But see, that's exactly
humor in this.
Yeah, but I mean, it's Steven Spielberg.
Music. I love this music for him walking.
Yeah, I like it.
It's Steven Spielberg potty humor, anyway.
It's tasteful potty humor.
Yeah, exactly. It's Steven Spielberg potty humor.
Yeah. He, man, if he got pulled over, he would be going to jail in a second. He wouldn't.
Yeah, that looked like it hurt. That looked pretty painful.
That would hurt.
That looked painful also. More beer.
I must have
nothing,
Coors.
Nothing numbs the pain of falling over drunk like more beer. Crushing the can. There you go.
Look at that. He's really not doing a bad
baby.
Job of acting right now.
How are you
but
doing?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happens. If, you know, girl looking at you from across the room, you're like, you panic and you start to